All right. We are back. I'm here in the studio with Mr. Bob Brody. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Pam.
How are you?
Good.
Good.
It's a good day in Kodiak.
It is a good day in Kodiak. A little chilly, but not a bad day.
Yeah, when you walk around and the sun's on you, it's okay. But when you turn the corner and go in the shadow of the building, it gets pretty chilly quick.
Yeah, quickly. Our little plants are going...
I hope all the berry crop survives.
Me too. All those blueberry blossoms that are already out there and salmon berry blossoms. Yep.
Something I think people in the bigger cities can't relate to that.
Yeah.
Our concerns.
Yeah, that's probably true. That is probably true. So, Bob, how did you get to the island?
It's a mystery to me.
Really?
I was...
Were the 60s good to you?
I was going to Oregon State University, and in 1973, I was about to graduate, and a guy who had been my roommate in the fraternity house the year before was a fisheries major, and he was working for the Halibut Commission in Kodiak. So he wrote a letter and said, hey, why don't you come to Kodiak? There's a lot of jobs in the canneries. You know, we can hunt and fish and do stuff and then look for a real job later. So... Hap Heiberg was in the fraternity house, so...
You've known Hap all those years?
Yeah, we're gonna have our 50-year anniversary here pretty quick.
Right, for September. The college class? Or the reunion?
Freshman class
at
Oregon State. But my 50-year high school reunion is coming up here in a month or so. But anyway, so Hap and I spent 2 weeks backpacking on the ferry and busing and training... on the train through Alaska, sleeping out here and there. And when we caught the ferry from Anchorage at the time, the Tustamina was coming from Anchorage, and got off the ferry, our friend Jim was on the dock waiting for us, and his helper was Val Flinders.
Oh, wow.
And so we lived in a little shack out on Spruce Cape Road, and at the end of the summer, Jim left, and Hap and Val and I are still here.
Still around kicking up dirt.
Yeah, we still haven't figured out how we got stuck.
So, presumably you're happily here.
Well, yeah. Yeah. How could you not be happy? But
well, that's a good point.
Oh, yeah. My first summer, in those days, there were so many people working in the canneries. There were like 20 canneries. And every morning we'd walk from Fuller's Boatyard to Gibson Cove, knocking on the doors of the canneries. And every morning there'd be 10 guys standing there waiting for somebody to be late and get fired.
And then the new guy'd come in.
Yeah, and then hippies cut your hair. They had all kinds of restrictions when they had more people than jobs.
Sure.
So we ended up working at BioDry.
Really?
Hap and I.
Huh.
So we couldn't even get a job in a cannery. We had to go lower to BioDry. So we went to work there. And then I got a night job at the Captain's Keg Pizza Parlor.
Oh, wow.
So working days and nights in the
which
70s.
Which is, Captain's Keg was in, let's see, which building?
Oh, it's above Sizzler Burger.
I was going to say, Peking's
Peking, yeah.
Building. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So you were working there for a while.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I met a lot of people, and many people who worked at the Captain's Keg are still here in Kodiak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Now, back in that time frame...
1973.
So the was the campground still at Gibson Cove at that time?
It hadn't even started then.
It hadn't started yet.
There were still people sleeping in the hills.
Kind of all over the place.
All over, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't until the 80s that the campground came in, I don't think.
Okay.
Because the...
And then it only lasted, well, maybe a decade.
Yeah, or less.
Yeah, and then was... taken out.
I think it was a good service to the community for the time it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, the Calacala was still down there and going strong in Gibson Cove.
As a processing plant.
New England Fish Company ran it. We were on there. Hap and I and a couple guys were on the softball team. It was quite a popular deal, softball back in the day.
Yeah. It's funny that, I mean, I know there's a softball league still, but it's not what it... Not as popular, I guess, as it was in the 80s, maybe, or in the 70s, even.
Yeah, I don't think kids today spend much time outdoors playing ball like mm-hmm. we did when we were kids, yeah. you know. It was about the only diversion when your mom couldn't stand you anymore and kicked you out of the house.
Go play ball.
Yeah, go find something to do.
That was the phrase, go find something to do.
Yeah, and in college there was all kinds of intramural teams and things like mm-hmm. that. So.
Yeah, we had a, where I grew up in southern Minnesota, we had a very active softball league for both men and women.
Oh, yeah. It was big down in California.
Yeah.
So I worked at BioDry for about a year, and then I had paid my way through college working construction.
Hmm.
And so I fell back into construction, worked on the base, building the public works garage, when there were still, this is 74, and at the
so
time...
So it was just barely out of the Navy then, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There were old buildings everywhere that people were tearing down, and... Mm-hmm. There were barracks all around where the guard shack is and big jet engine testing facility
wow.
here by the road and stuff. So we built the public works garage, and then I was going to leave Alaska. I was going to head for the South Seas.
Really?
Yeah, I played rugby at Oregon State, and the rugby coach was from New Zealand. And if he said I wanted to go to New Zealand, he'd find me a job down there.
Wow.
So... happened, I drove the Alcan in the winter of 74, and I was on my way till one of our roommates, Chris Kinter, said, hey, I'm getting married, why don't you come to the wedding? And so we came up in January, and after the wedding I said, well, I'll go to Anchorage, and if I can get on the pipeline, I'll go to work. If I can't, I'm headed south. And so I ended up like the second day getting a job that lasted 2.5 years.
Wow. Where were you working on the pipeline?
Sheep Creek.
Sheep Creek.
Just down by Valdez.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just below the Thompson Pass before you go through the Keystone Canyon.
Nice. So, beautiful country there.
Yeah, we helped build the camp, and then I was on camp maintenance for a couple years. So every morning, job security, 2 more feet of snow on top
yeah,
of all the roofs.
I was going to say, lots of snow up there.
Yeah.
Lots of snow. Pretty country, though.
And Kodiak was fun then. It was a good time for young people.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be young to survive, you know. Cause
it was kind of tough.
Well, it was tough, but it was fun. I'd work at the pizza parlor. Charlie Davidson and Rose Marie were the managers.
Really?
Yeah. And Janet Wente worked there, and I forget all the people who worked there, but... I would, as soon as they found I could make change and be honest, then they'd go home at 9 o'clock and I'd close up.
Sure.
So I'd take a dollar and go down to the bar to have one beer and go home. And in those days, the bell was ringing so hard, I'd go home at 5 o'clock with a dollar in my pocket and change clothes and go to work, you know.
And go back and do it again.
You had to be 22 or 23 to do that for very long.
Yeah, true.
But
true.
It was a fun place. A lot of young people, a lot of things to do.
Well, and I wonder what the population was about then. Not quite what it is now, I don't think.
You know, it's hard to know because there were so many canneries and so many cannery workers at the time. So.
And were the cannery workers mostly based here, or was it still transient at that time? I mean, lots of college kids coming up to work. And
yeah, the summer was a lot of transient, but there was a lot of resident workers.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, as people kind of... changed, then they started recruiting more at the time were itinerant mm-hmm. processing workers from the vegetable and fruit orchards, mm-hmm. vegetables of California, and then those people came up and stayed. I think that was what really got the Filipino population going in Kodiak, and they became the professional cannery workforce, you know, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. was indispensable to the fish processing
the
industry.
Yeah. All right, so you worked at Captain's Keg, and how long were you there, do you think?
Oh, I was there at least a year, and then after the pipeline, I came back and helped out a little bit. Ken Forrester was the owner.
Was there, yeah.
Yeah, I just got a letter from him the other day. He's quite a character.
Where is he now?
Between New York State and Alaska in the summer.
Mm, okay. So pipeline days were... that was an interesting, I was talking with somebody, at the same time the pipeline days were so crazy and there was so much money going around, Kodiak was booming too because of crab business and you know, late 70s, mid 70s to the early 80s, I guess, in the interior of Alaska anyway, the pipeline money was pretty crazy, how much money was floating around back then.
Yeah, it was crazy, but I was just cleaning out some old boxes, and mm-hmm. what made it crazy was the hours, you know, working 60, 70 hours a week.
Right.
And being in a camp where you couldn't spend it. And
then you had this pile of money.
You got worked. I think I was started at like $8 an hour.
Oh, huh.
So it wasn't.
It's just that you never had a place to spend it.
Yeah, you worked 9 weeks and got a week off, and then I missed most of the 70s, it seemed like, in Kodiak, because I was working.
Yeah.
And then I traveled for almost a year afterwards, so.
Where'd you go?
Mostly all over Europe and mm-hmm. then down into Africa.
Nice.
Went to Timbuktu and sent everybody I knew postcards.
From Timbuktu?
I've been there.
It's like the Hank Snow song.
Yeah, yeah.
So did you, after you did the pipeline and you came back here, other than your year of traveling, or was that after that, that you did your traveling?
Yeah, late 70s.
Yeah. Did you hang out here then, pretty much, or?
Yeah. I went back to work in construction. I worked for Lou Snyder in Brecon mm-hmm. and Granite, but for doing, or Kiewit doing Terror Lake.
Oh, you did? You worked on Terror Lake, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then in the summers, I fished salmon in Bristol Bay for 4 years just to see what it was all about.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a blast. So,
well, that's cool. Did you meet your bride here?
Yeah.
Sort of.
A little later, yeah.
Yeah.
I was working for Brecon, and at the time I went to a city council meeting one day and was talking about parks or something, and I didn't think they were very attentive, so I ran for city council in 1984, and three of us ran for 2 seats, and I got the second seat by 14 votes, you know.
Ooh, squeaked by.
So if 8 people had changed their mind, I'd have been out when I won.
Well, and that started your political career, because when I moved here, you were city mayor at that time.
Yeah. In 1987, John Pugh retired as mayor, and so then I ran against another guy and won. I guess you could say I won, because I was mayor during the oil spill.
That was quite a time.
I got quite an education.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everybody did.
So then I was mayor until 91, and then I had just gotten married, and so that's when I decided to stay home a little more.
Instead of going to all these meetings and stuff.
Yeah.
And stuff. So you were here probably, you got here in 73?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were here almost before KMXT became, I don't think we were on the air yet in 73. We were in the formation stages, but seems
I remember talking to people when you were getting started. I think Charlie Davidson or Cliff, one of them were
actually
very
both of them
active.
Were involved in it. Yeah.
And I talked to him at the time because I'd known Charlie from work at the pizza parlor and stuff. So. And then KMXT, during the oil spill, you know, was an integral part of the process. You know, in broadcasting our daily meetings in the beginning, and then every couple meetings a week to the villages. We got some extra money, I think, to put those translators in a couple of the villages that didn't have them. So
everybody could hear what was going on.
Yeah.
I know. I moved here to Kodiak in June of 89, right after the oil spill, and I was managing the hotel downtown. And the broadcasts on KMXT were critical to me because I didn't have much time to get out of the hotel to go to meetings, et cetera. But that was where I learned what was going on and sort of how it was impacting the community. And you know, it taught me a lot about the livelihoods here, et cetera. It was just kind of a real quick learning curve. So
Kodiak was very fortunate at the time because as a result of the tsunami, we had previous councils and assemblies had developed the Emergency Services Council, which at the time was me as the city mayor, the borough mayor, the city manager, and than the two captains of the base, the air station and the sports center. So we pretty much organized under that umbrella. And we were luckier than the other communities that got affected because they ended up with what they called these MAC committees, which were like 10 or 15 people, you know, Fish and Wildlife, Fish and Game, Park Service, everybody sitting at this table trying to set policy, whereas all of those groups were subsidiary to our group. So we would...
And you already had policies and processes in place. Yeah. That was lucky.
So instead of the septic tank inspector from Tok being the DEC guy trying to make decisions for Kodiak, they were coming to us for what we saw as priorities and things. So
that's good.
It helped. So it was very interesting. And you've talked right past two of my songs here, but the one
I did.
The one song from that John Pfeiffer was the news director at the time of the oil spill, and
yes,
he came up with our theme song. What
was
that?
Which was
the Bobby McFerrin.
All right.
There you go.
Should we play that?
I need a drink of water. Play a song.
Here we go. Whoop. Here we go.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your bed. Don't worry, be happy. The landlord say your rent is late. He may have to litigate. Don't worry, be happy.
Look at me, I'm happy. Don't worry, be happy. I give you my phone number. When you worry, call me. I make you happy.
Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no cash, ain't got no style, ain't got no gal to make you smile. But don't worry, be happy. 'Cause when you worry, your face will frown, and that will bring everybody down. So don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy.
Now there is this song I wrote. I hope you learned it note for note like good little children. Don't worry,
be happy. Listen to what I say. In your life, expect some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be
happy. Be happy now.
Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, don't worry, don't do it. Be happy. Put a smile on your face. Don't bring everybody down like this. Don't worry. It will soon pass, whatever it is. Don't worry, be happy. I'm not worried. I'm happy.
So that was the end of all of your...
That was the lead-in.
The lead-in, okay.
Everybody was always stressed and worked up for the meeting, trying to hear the latest news at the oil spill meetings. And so John Pfeiffer would lead into the opening of the meeting with that. So,
good way to lead in.
Try to get everybody just to calm down and figure out a way to get through it all.
Yeah. Well, obviously people got through it, but it was indeed a stressful time.
It was very stressful. You saw a lot of different sides of people and how they reacted to it. The stress of kids not making any college money.
Yeah.
Families expecting the husbands and sons to be gone fishing, and now they're on the beach all summer underfoot with the wives and their scheme of how summer ran. So,
people concerned about livelihoods. And
met a lot of good people and have some good, very good memories of how Kodiak came together and worked on things.
Well, it was not without good leadership. You guys did a great job of just from somebody outside looking in, because I was very new to town, and it was obvious that you guys were doing your very best to keep things moving ahead.
Well, there's a lot of people worked very hard. You know, I was city mayor. Jerome was the borough mayor. Gordon Gould was the city manager. I forget the two captains of the base's names at this point.
I don't remember.
Linda Freed and Bud Cassidy and Roy Diebel and a whole lot of city staff, Corky.
At the harbor.
I worked hard trying to, I think Barbara Rudio at the library worked with oil birds and things. So there was a lot of people pitched in to work for the community.
Yeah.
KMXD was funny. In the early days, I probably told you this before, but we, in the first part of the spill, all the focus was on Prince William Sound, and it wasn't until everything flushed out of the sound and it started to be carried north up to Kodiak that people started to get aware of it. So our first big meeting was over in the auditorium, and the captain of the port and an Exxon guy came over. And then after the meeting, we were going over to the borough building to do stuff, and the reporter at the time was Charlene Parent, you know, a little buxom blonde lady, very sharp, sharp lady. And so we're going to go into this meeting, and the captain, Coast Guard captain, turns around and says, there's no press in here. This is a private meeting. He says, you'll have to leave. And she just looks him in the eye, and she says, no.
Good for her.
And the guy blinked, and he says, no, you got to go. And she goes, no.
No.
So he turns it around to us, you know, our little gang of five, you know, and the other Coast Guard guys are kind of, you know, just looking off, not wanting to get involved. And Jerome and I and Gordon and I looked at each other, and we turned to the guy and I told him, that's not how we roll in Kodiak.
Good.
We do it all in the public eye. And so he was very unhappy, but Charlene stood her ground, and
good for her.
We did all our meetings with people to witness it, and I felt very good about that.
Yeah, well, that was a good move. We have...
Matt Miller was working in Kodiak at the time, too, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
We have, I think Pfeiffer might have put some of this together, a 10-year sort of collection of some of those broadcasts that would be worth sometime dusting off to listen to now that it's 30 years since then. Gosh, yeah, that seems weird, doesn't it, that was 30 years ago?
I know, it's crazy. we escaped Good Friday with no notable incidents this time.
Yes, so we did.
After tidal waves and oil spills.
Yes, Good Friday has been an interesting day here in Kodiak in the past, but yeah. So we weren't able to find the Waterbound tune that you wanted to listen to, but we did find one.
Yeah, substitute. It, as I said, in the early days in the 70s, it was a good community. Everybody knew each other, and there was a lot of different parties at people's houses and potlucks. Bryce Gordon, his wife, Nira out in the flats would have things. We'd have stuff in Minoshka, and so many musicians within that little group, you know, Ron Monroe, Stacy Studebaker, D. Todd Littlefield.
Jane Eisman
and Brad Stevens. And then there was that whole other crazy gang of twang, you know? So, but those five had a group called Waterbound, and we heard a lot of their music. And then Andy Edgerly and the twang gang would have square dancing out there. So it was a big deal on the weekends and in the winters. For people just to get together and share a potluck and have fun. So,
and have a good time. Yeah.
So here's a Waterbound song.
All right. See if I can make this work.
Watching the wildlife in Kodiak. Watching the wildlife in Kodiak. You better be careful and not turn your back. A fisherman stood on his boat late one night. A hungry sea lion thought he looked just right. So he jumped from the water and took a big bite. But the sea lion had 20-20 hindsight.
Watching the wildlife in Kodiak. Watching the wildlife in Kodiak. You better be careful and not turn your back while watching the wildlife in Kodiak.
A trio of hunters went loaded for bear. Looked high and low, but could find them nowhere. When they got back to camp, they were oh so surprised to find that the bears had destroyed their supplies.
Watching the wildlife in Kodiak. Watching the wildlife in Kodiak. You'd better be careful and not turn your back. Watching the wildlife in Kodiak.
A quartet of kayakers looking for whales. They looked for their flukes and they looked for their tails. When one of the kayakers gave quite a shout. For right next to the kayak, the whale blew his spout.
Watching the wildlife in Kodiak. Watching the wildlife in Kodiak. You'd better be careful and not turn your back while watching the wildlife in Kodiak.
Now here's a good tip from a salty old tar. If you want to know where all the best wildlife are, go down to the docks and just sit in your car and watch all the wildlife come out of the bars.
Watching the wildlife in Kodiak. Watching the wildlife in Kodiak.
you'd better be careful and not turn your back while watching the wildlife in Kodiak Act.
All right. That was Waterbound. And they were playing music in the 80s, I know. Do you think they were in the 70s, too? I think most of these recordings came from the 80s, I think.
It's all a blur to me.
I know.
I'm sure they were all playing music and doing stuff in those days.
Yeah, but not necessarily as a Waterbound group. But so that was Brad Stevens, Jane Eisman, Ron Monroe, Stacy Studebaker. Who am I missing? D-Todd.
D-Todd Littlefield, yeah.
Yeah. Quite a group.
Yeah, yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was always entertaining.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's always fun to have live music around, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, I'm just going to do a little plug. Tonight at 7 o'clock, we're going to have live music here in the studio. Drew Sablon's going to play about an hour's worth of music for us, so tune in at 7 for some special entertainment. Mm. So we've gotten through maybe Bob's first 15 years in Kodiak. We got through the oil spill pretty much. You said you stayed as mayor until about 91?
Yes.
Or
yes,
so?
Yes. And I had worked construction all the way up until that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed on as mayor during the oil spill. I didn't go out and work on any of the spill-affected communities.
Right.
And so
you're too busy.
Yeah. I was chairman of the oil mayors of all the 50-some spill-affected communities. We'd have to go to Anchorage and have meetings and meet with Secretary of Transportation. And
yeah.
We even met with your... with the vice president at the time. Your buddy Dan Quayle, I think.
My buddy.
It was always
Bob and I wear different political hats sometimes.
It was fun. And then in 1990, I got my real estate license. Decided to try something different because construction was starting to wear me down.
So you wanted to go from the other one side to the other of the construction business, sort of.
Yeah, I went to work for Associated Island Brokers,
mm-hmm.
and at the time there were five different owners.
They had merged into yes. the one company, so
yes.
We were talking about this a little bit offline. I'd forgotten that it had been two individual real estate agencies.
Yeah, Island Realty and Associated merged. So Toby Cook, Laura Bealey, Charlene Sullivan, Tom Everett, and Craig Johnson were the owners, and so I worked there a few years, and then mm-hmm. Toby retired, and I bought his share. And then as different people left, I ended up being the last guy standing and owned the company for many years.
So, yeah, now you're the...
I'm the owner, but also I sold half my business to a lady that works there, Melanie mm-hmm. Ladislau.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie's a Kodiak girl. She's very bright, very sharp,
So she's half
quite,
owner
quite
now.
An asset. Yep, quite an asset to the company.
Great.
And then about that time too, I ended up getting married. Finally, convinced my wife
to marry you.
To marry me finally.
Did you guys meet here on the island? We sort of touched on that a little bit, but
yes.
So you met here.
Took a few years to convince her.
How'd you meet?
Kind of, it was a blind date.
Really?
Yeah.
That obviously worked out in both of your favors.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
We've been together for a long time.
Yeah, since late 80s. Stephanie Love was working at the Chamber and sold me a ticket to the Chamber Ball at Crab Festival time.
Okay.
And so I said, okay, well, if I can't find anybody, you have to find me somebody. So she set me up with Joanne and...
Seriously, you owe it all to Stephanie?
That's who I place the blame on.
I wonder what Joanne says about that.
Fortunately, she's in Tacoma.
Oh.
Her mom's 90th birthday. So.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
So it's been good. My daughter Claire was born like 2 weeks before my 40th birthday, and then my son Pearson, and then my stepdaughter Rachel. She's mm-hmm. Was 4 years old when we first met, so it's been good.
Yeah.
And stay active in different things. Right now we're working on the Scholarship Foundation. This is our 31st year, I think.
Wow, really?
We started it in 1989, Walt Ebel and John Witteveen and I, to provide scholarships to graduating seniors.
So you, the foundation basically works with other organizations that have scholarship funds? Is that how it works? Maybe just tell us how that works a little bit.
No, we generated our own scholarships.
Okay.
From giving out 10 $1,000 scholarships in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we gave out, where's my paper here? Because we're just now working on it.
Hmm.
Last year, we had 105 different scholarships for a total of $86,750.
That's impressive.
And we're going to be up in the 90,000 this year.
And that's impressive.
We have 58 applications. We're reviewing 47 academic and 11 vocational.
Mm-hmm.
And so with only 58 kids applying, a couple of kids are going to be forced to take two scholarships.
Darn.
So, but even then, it's the cost of education is just crazy.
Oh, nowadays. My. I can't imagine trying to put somebody through school at this day and age or yourself through school.
Yeah. In the 60s, I graduated in 69. Mm-hmm. 50-year reunion's coming up in a month. But I could work construction and pretty much pay for a summer. But
yeah.
It's a rare kid who has a fishing job that can do that.
That maybe could do it. Yeah. Yeah, it's very tough. And even vocational, you know, it used to be that vocational education was a little less expensive than a college degree, and I'm not sure that's so true anymore. Many of those schools are darn near as spendy.
Yeah, yeah. And vocational, the definition of it, it's broadened greatly
from the
beginning.
Yeah.
We have kids going to welding and plumbing schools and then culinary schools and mm-hmm. dental assistant schools. And so there's a lot of opportunity there for kids if they'll just turn in an application and apply
Go
themselves.
For it.
Yeah. So we'll be making our announcements on who wins what here first or second week of May.
Okay. That's great. Good work.
It's fun.
So you had, now when your kids were growing up, were they involved in extracurricular activities in the schools or that kind of keep you
busy? They were always
busy.
Claire was on dance team.
Mm-hmm.
Pearson was a wrestler. And then I drug them to all the Lions events they could stand.
Yeah, we'll touch on the Lions Club too. All the Lions events they could stand, yeah. So that keeps you active when you have kids in school and going to all those things too. That keeps you pretty busy.
Yeah, and I was in the Booster Club.
Mm-hmm.
Worked a couple of more years, mornings, selling stuff before school at the Bear's Den. So the Booster Club is a really good organization. It formed probably about the same time the Scholarship Foundation did, some local people. And in the last few years, they've been giving close to $100,000 back into student activities.
That's pretty amazing. Well, and a lot of those student activities wouldn't exist without that Booster Club.
Yeah.
Many
of the sports teams, about a third of their budget comes from the Booster Club.
Yeah.
So, and the Booster Club is suffering the same malady of any volunteer group around the country, the island, is it's fewer and fewer people helping out.
Yeah.
Many of us, I helped 4 or 5 years after my kids had graduated. Just to
keep it going.
Yeah. So Amy Willis is the president, and Andrea Anderson and Stephanie
Love. Well, and Amy's
Love.
Kids have been gone now for a while, although she still works at the school district, but, you know.
Yeah, so anybody who has a kid coming up from middle school that wants to help out, I'm sure that they would welcome a helper.
Yeah. Well, and talking about service organizations, you've been actively involved in the Lions Club, well, at least 30 years, because you were when I got here 30 years ago, so how long?
I would think it was 91 or 90, maybe 92. My friend Hap was trying to get me to join, but I wouldn't, while I was still mayor, I wouldn't join anything else I had to go to a meeting to do. I didn't have time, so.
Yeah.
So probably since 91, I guess. 92.
Somewhere in there.
It's kind of hazy. But
I'm not even going to go
the
there.
The club works hard and support community activities. Their main focus worldwide is preventable blindness.
Mm-hmm.
So we buy eyeglasses for kids, cataract surgeries, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Many in third world countries. That's why we have the eyeglass recycling.
Right, we have one of the boxes here at the station. Mm-hmm. It's been here for quite a while. So if you have eyeglasses you need to recycle, you can drop them off right here.
They put them in a machine that tells them what the prescription is, and then when they're off in Southeast Asia or Africa, they try to match as close as they can. And it might not be perfect, but it's for somebody who's never had...
It's a whole lot better than nothing. Yeah,
who've never had glasses and clear sight. It's quite a blessing for them.
Yeah. Especially kids, you know, because if they're learning or they're in a classroom or whatever and they can't see,
it's
amazing what a difference that can make. But, so the Lions Club used to have the famous oyster feed and the...
The Buskin River raft race.
Yeah, and the raft races and, all kinds of crazy things. It's true. It's true. But the Lions Club does a lot of stuff here locally, too, to help people out if they're, there's the worldwide mission, mm-hmm. but then there's a community mission that they help with as well.
We do a Coats for Kids things. If there's one of the schools, the counselors tell us the kids are coming to school dressed inappropriately for the weather. We'll get somebody and we'll take them down to Max or someplace and
get them a coat
and boot and hat and stuff. We do eye screening. It used to be there was a machine you had to take a picture of the kid's eyes and the light would bounce off the retina and we'd send those Polaroids into the doctor in Anchorage.
Mm.
Well, now they have a thing just like a radar gun that...
reads it instantly.
Yeah. Joyce Gregory has been doing that pretty religiously every fall at the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells instantly if a kid needs to be referred to some place for further examination. So we still work very hard on that. And then Crab Festival, we're active with the arm wrestling and the sawdust pile. And
mm-hmm. Kids love that sawdust pile. That's fun.
Yeah. And then the fall, we're going to do the Warm August Night thing.
Oh, good.
Community picnic.
In August sometime. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you guys help, I mean, you certainly help KMXT because anytime we have an event, outdoor event, and we need some tents, you guys are there with your tents for our bear crawl and our run the rock events. Those things come in very handy, you know, to have every organization in town have to buy those would just be crazy. So to be able to go to you and say, hey, Bob, can you put me on your list for October 12th?
Well, we try to do a lot of community service ones, but it's also a fundraiser for
right,
the club.
Right.
So I think KMXT, we worked out a deal a long time ago for in-kind for advertising.
And yep, announcements, which you need to do.
I think we're a little behind.
Yeah, you are. You're way behind.
Yeah, so.
You need to come in and do some stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, talking about that, you could be doing announcements trying to recruit some new volunteers. Mm. You know, I remember when, oftentimes when you're younger, you don't have a lot of money to donate, but you have time.
Exactly.
And that's one great way that you can give back to the community you live in, wherever you are, in whatever. There are so many organizations in this town. You can find an organization that matches up with what your interests are, whether it be the Library Association or it be learning to be on air at KMXT or putting up tents at the Lions Club.
Oh, yeah, the Rotary's got things, Kiwanis,
mm-hmm.
Quilters.
Yep, all kinds of things.
Codex got a very diverse, interesting community.
Yeah, so and if you have the time.
Yeah, when I first joined, there was a number of people my age, and we had a great time meeting on a Saturday to build a bus shelter.
Yeah, and doing whatever.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. It is. It's a good way to give back a little bit. You got another tune you want to play?
Oh, let's digress.
Us? <That's>, really?
Let's try this one.
This one or this one?
This one. This
okay, one. Here we go.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bob, are you going to interpret that song for us?
I don't know. I was. You said I had to find some songs here. I kind of got trapped doing this by Mary Forbes, and
she did a good job.
She was trying to sell me raffle tickets, and I didn't have my checkbook on me. So she said, "If you can't buy anything, then you have to go volunteer." So
well, little do you know that we're going to hit you up for raffle tickets anyway. But
subsequently, she has hit me up for raffle tickets.
Oh, there you go.
But also, I made my pledge. It's nice, the fundraising.
We appreciate that.
Yep.
We appreciate that.
It's worth a dollar a day, I think, so.
Well, thank you.
The rest of the people can come pledge, too, if they enjoy it. So we haven't even invited them to pledge anything to get rid of us.
No, that's true. We could. You know, you want to boot us off the air, you can give us a call.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're bored listening to us, give us a call. 486-3181.
I like to call into the DJs Sunday night if we're out in Chiniac listening to the jazz and stuff. And
make a request.
Friday evenings and stuff. I enjoy doing that. So
yeah.
At least lets them know there's somebody out there.
And you know what? When you're in here and you're playing music, it is nice to know that somebody's listening. So it's always, whether you're making a request or not, to say, hey, I really like what you're playing. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Good to hear. All right. So we kind of talked around your entire history here. And we talked at one point you had a choice of going south to New Zealand or staying here. But really, other than that, what has kept you here on the island?
Well, good question. I think a lot of it has to do with just the people you meet here.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's a big step to go somewhere and have to reestablish connections and roots and stuff. And
sure.
And certainly can do it, and some people are better at it than others. But I always enjoyed getting up and going to work, and the people I worked with and the people I spent recreation time with was mm-hmm. always fun. So it never got to the point where I thought I had to go look for someplace else, you know. So Kodiak's a good spot.
It is a good spot. We're glad you stayed.
Well, it's been fun. It's been fun. It's hard to have an opportunity like this to share stories on the air, and KMXT mm-hmm. provides a valuable service, although there's many people out there probably wondering what value there's been in the last hour.
I'm sure they've been entertained. It's been a good history lesson, if nothing else.
Yeah, when you get as old.
Yeah. There's that. I shouldn't have gone there. Sorry.
And my, you know, I'm going to my 50th reunion, and my daughter will be here in a couple of weeks for her 10-year reunion.
Yeah.
So I just don't understand how the time goes by.
Very quickly is how it goes by. Very quickly.
I was looking, you said to bring songs, and I was looking on the hits of the 70s and 80s and 90s, and 70s was about the only place I recognized any music. You know, after that, it was all just noise.
You know, well, it was just noise. And for me, I lived in Tok from 83 to 89. So all we had there was AFRN, which, you know, so I missed the whole era of big hair bands, and which is not a great loss, in my opinion. But anyway, yeah, so I'm with you. 60s, 70s music I recognize. Not
the,
so much
the golden
the
age of rock and roll.
Yeah, there you go. So speaking of which, what would you like to hear next? We have another guest coming up in about 5 or 6 minutes, so.
Well, let's go with the Animals. It's
all
probably
right.
An appropriate song for this point. But
you think so?
Thank you for the opportunity to come, and good luck with your fundraiser. And
thank you very much for coming in and spending time
to get
with
out
us.
Devote a few minutes to whatever piques your interest. Whatever group is out there,
yeah.
I'm sure could welcome and enjoy having another volunteer to many hands make the projects much easier.
And young new ideas are always welcome at many of those service groups and nonprofits.
Oh,
and things.
We get a new member that wants to try something new, and we do it, and just to see what happens. And it's changed the course of the club over the years.
Which is a good thing.
Yes.
It is a good thing. All right. Thank you again, Bob.
Thank
Appreciate
you, Pam.
It. The Animals.
In this dirty old part of the city, where the sun refused to shine, people tell me there ain't no use in trying.
and you.
Now, my girl, you're so young and pretty, and one thing I know.